Welcome to the Enterprise Mobility Roundup podcast, brought to you by Bluefledge. We discuss mobility topics related to Android and enterprise workforce devices and how they intersect with business and technology. This is episode 225. We're joined by mobility experts Richard Makerson and Brett Cooper, where they will discuss how enterprises transition to the Android platform and common mistakes they often face. Welcome, Richard and Brett.
Richard, good morning. Thanks for joining me today. So once upon a time in 2011, we spent a lot of time talking to companies about migrating from Windows CE to Android. Do you remember what IT organizations told us when we were spouting this knowledge? Was it about 12 years ago?
A few things. Devices work. Why do I need to replace them? Everybody I know uses iOS. Even my parents can use it. So we're going to iOS. Or, you know, Android, you know, why do I want to go to Android? That's, you know, it's not secure. You know, you could root the device, so many issues. There's a myriad of things that I remember from 2011, people telling us on the way out the door.
Cheap Chinese phones. I don't want those.
Right.
And then Motorola came out with this. MC40 was the first real big one we started getting companies to migrate to.
Yep. But you still had a few companies saying, I'm going to wait for Windows 7.
And Windows 8.
Windows Mobile 8.
Windows 9.
Right. And, you know, Microsoft bought Nokia and wrote that off. So eventually organizations had to realize that Microsoft was not going to be in the mobility space going forward. And it's really an iOS or Android world. And, you know, there's a lot of lessons learned from, you know, those organizations that chose to use iOS devices as, you know, enterprise rugged devices.
Yeah, we talked about the topic for today, and I think we came up with about 2 pages of notes and lessons learned.
Yes.
But I think we distilled it down to the 7 mistakes we see people make the most. And we're talking about those. So I guess the first one you called out was migrating one for one. Do you want to talk about that? Why that's a mistake? Why we see people do that still?
Yeah. So you have a number of organizations typically asking, you know, can we just take what we have that already works and just move it to this OS? I know there's work involved, but we wouldn't have to retrain people. We wanted to create this documentation. Like that'd be a great deal. And on the surface of it, it sounds great. But what people fail to understand is you create a lot of technical debt over the years. And if you're migrating one to one, you're migrating a lot of that technical debt with you. And you miss out on the opportunity to develop and use new patterns that have been developed along the way. So I see a lot of companies wanting to make that mistake. In the past, we've done a good job of convincing them not to do that, but there still have been one or two that slipped through the cracks, and those projects have been very painful.
My favorite is the app designed 2003 for a stylus, and they want to do the same thing on Android. And like, I remember everybody's been touching their screens, their fingers for the last 10 years.
And yes.
It's not something that we do anymore. Nobody uses stylus anymore. Yeah. No, that's interesting. So the second one we talked about was over-engineering. Talk about that a little bit. What does over-engineering mean?
Yep. It's exactly what it sounds like. You over-engineer, or you put too much engineering into the solution that you're creating. I typically see this when organizations or engineers or architects have been emotionally hurt by other platforms, meaning I have, you know, an iOS device, whether it be an iPod Touch, and, you know, I put a sled on there that has an integrated scanner. And of course, those two things work okay in the lab, but day after day, you know, with tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of them being deployed, there are going to be issues. And so it's those nuances I see people over engineering around. And then sometimes, you know, it's around a problem that existed only in Windows Mobile, but, you know, we need to make sure it doesn't happen in Android. Well, Android inherently might not have that problem. I'm just speaking hypothetically. So, you know, don't engineer for a problem until it's a problem.
Yeah. I feel like scanners, we see people a lot writing their own scanner libraries.
Writing your own scanner libraries, your own networking libraries. I've had a request for writing your own dependency injection. Why?
Use what Google gives you. This. Take what Google gives you.
Yes.
Yeah. So on that note, that's a really good segue into the third topic, which was frameworks, but people not leveraging frameworks.
Yep.
Talk about what, I guess, what is a framework? Walk me through like the, what are these pieces that are out there that we see people using?
Yeah. So a framework is a library or a pattern that somebody has created to solve a problem. It could be for making a web service request. It could be for being able to display pictures that downloads in the background or does some type of neat caching for you. However, the goal is for it to be a catalyst, for it to help you solve a problem or get over a hurdle without you having to create that problem from scratch. In the days of WinMo, when we were working at Accenture early in our careers, you know, a lot of the things we had to do was create from scratch, and the things that were publicly available, you really had to weigh out, you know, what would work, what you would want to put in the solution. I've seen companies, especially in the iOS world, get burnt with, you know, GitHub projects that either get abandoned or Apple makes a big change in the OS, meaning that what worked before will not work going forward. And so that makes it tough. But, you know, Android is inherently open source. And so the fact that I can go in the OS and see what's happening, or go into somebody's library and see what is happening, I can make my own changes, just inherently levels the playing field. So, you know, leverage frameworks, and especially the ones that Google has been incorporating that used to be third party that are now, you know, part of Android, and, you know, Google's putting their, you know, name behind those.
It's like the Square libraries. So if you, you know, people always talk about aren't libraries inherently insecure? Like that was the big Log4j issues earlier this year, where somebody's like, oh, Log4j is not secure. But
right. But it's one version of Log4j. It's not all of Log4j. It's 2 point whatever. And if you happen to be on that version, you need to upgrade now.
Yeah. Yeah. I think with, you know, the flip side of that is the Square, sort of Square Up, if anybody's followed there, they do a lot of libraries. Jake Wharton and the team over there on the Android side, they spend a lot. And then Google's even rolled a lot of those in. But their, you know, their business is they're effectively taking payment transactions. So there's a lot on the line for those guys, and they spend a lot of time from a security standpoint. So, you know, don't be scared of frameworks. Is the end result, right?
Especially if millions of people are using it every day, it's okay to explore that path.
Yeah. The next item we had was UX.
Yep.
And I guess when we talk about the problem with UIs, it sort of goes back to the first point you have, migrating one for one, but not thinking about user experience, not understanding, what is the Google frameworks and the, Google material design. So can you talk a little bit about the problems we've seen with people around user experience on Android?
Yeah. So all of these build on one another and almost goes back to don't migrate one for one. So, you know, if there's a design pattern that is close to what Android's doing, but let's say you're coming over from iOS app, it's generally okay to put that in there. But if you're migrating from a web app, or if you have a paper-based process and you know it doesn't look good, but you know everybody understands what it means, you know, you should take the time to take a step back and say, okay, should we now stick closer to some of the modern UX patterns? I know for Google, it's material design, but it's a really good base to start from. There's a lot of apps, whether it's iOS or Android or web, that that pull from material design. So in, you know, the last 10 years, people are accustomed to seeing it, even if they don't know what it is. But you know, it gives you a chance to, you know, rethink how, you know, crappy interfaces work, just because 300,000 people know how this crappy button works or what this crappy message means doesn't mean we should keep it.
My favorite was that we did a store walk one time with a company that's looking to migrate from Windows CE, and the guys, we go in there and the guy from the ops team goes to employees, anything you want to improve in the app? And the guy from the store goes, no, it's great. You know, he walks through, he goes, I'll show you, we pick an order. So he types in his password, picks the order, hits complete, and then goes to the next order he has to pick, types in his password, clicks on the order, completes it. He does this 10 times. And I asked the guy, I was like, is there like anything you'd want to improve? He goes, no, I like the process. It's pretty good. After I watched this guy enter his password 10 times to pull the orders he had to for the day, it's just like, nobody sat down at any point in time and thought through like, oh, maybe they want to pull more than one order at a time. Maybe you shouldn't have to type your password in 10 times.
But it works, right? And I think that's the difference between you and I or anybody here at BlueFletch, like our focus is making sure that that person has the greatest user experience ever. And for us, that sticks out like a sore thumb. But for some organizations, if it's not hitting their balance sheet, if nobody's going to hold me responsible for this, then, you know, it carries on like that day after day. And that's just one of many bad examples we could give everybody today.
I do like that big companies have started investing in UX teams. I feel like that the Walmarts and the Home Depots of the world led the way. I love the fact that they actually have dedicated UX people that look and review projects along with the architects and everybody else.
Yeah, they get it. I mean, if you're going to remain a leader in the industry, like you have to continue to innovate and try things out. Some things work, some things don't work, but you can't be afraid to try.
Yeah. Think about your employees as customers.
There you go.
They're going to go somewhere. They're expensive to replace. They're the lifeblood of your organization. So the next topic you had on there was middleware. And this makes me think of soap services. Okay. XML. It's like, was it 2001, 2002? So
yep.
Tell me about the things we've seen people do wrong around middleware when they're migrating their apps to Android.
Not using that as an advantage, as a chance to upgrade, right? So they say, well, you know, I read this article from 5 years ago that said, you know, Android applications can ingest SOAP web services. And just because it can doesn't mean it should. And so, yes, it can work, but once again, you're carrying over a lot of technical debt. So is this an opportunity to, you know, get rid of it just like a hoarder? You know, is it time to clean out the house or clean out the kitchen or pantry and throw those things that are expired away? I mean, that's one thing that made that Log4j vulnerability so powerful was because there's a lot of people that use it. There's a lot of people that are probably in that version window, and they know if it works, nobody's going to look at it or touch it. Therefore, that vulnerability affected so many people because nobody's constantly updating. Are we on the latest version? Worried about security patches. But, you know, when events like that happen, I feel like those are also opportunities to change.
I feel like patching and upgrading is a whole nother topic we could spend 2 hours talking about.
It really is. But, you know, your app is only as good as the network connection that it has and the web services or the services that are available to it. And so, you know, if you can condense, you know, a few service calls into one service call, or, you know, these devices have a lot more power, so you could process a little bit more on the mobile app side of things. You know, use that time as a way to, you know, go through and upgrade your middleware.
Yep. And so item number six, which is, it's related to the connectivity and network situation. And this one is probably one that I'm most endeared to, is when you have devices and you have this crappy network infrastructure, your devices are crappy. So what is this? What is bad network connection? Not investing in that. Tell me about that being a mistake.
You know, it's like a car where the engine doesn't work. Like the mood lighting can be great. You can have massage seats and heat it and cool. But if it can't get you to point A to point B or get you there reliably, you know, what's the use? And so, you know, you've been on projects where, you know, they've come in and said, yeah, we updated the network. You know, we're ready for these devices. And they've brought over one for one, you know, DNS records or old network topologies, thinking that it's plug and play and it should work. And, you know, the devices seem slow. People are irritated. And you come to find out that it's bad DNS settings, or there are old APs that are still on but not connected to any internet.
All cranked up to 100%. So 20 APs all cranked up to 100%. And the devices constantly roam. Yeah, so I think that the thing that we call out is, if you're going to put out new devices and spend millions of dollars on them, go spend a little on your infrastructure for the network at the same time. So that's something else. And then
don't let me forget this point, especially as these networks are getting better about collect for the data. So going back to our analytics podcast, you know, Wi-Fi 6 has better indoor locationing and precision tracking. And so like that's an opportunity to collect that data, feed it back into the organization to either, you know, make that employee's job more better, or, you know, find efficiencies throughout your organization.
Yeah. Leverage the new standards.
Yep.
And number seven, which is also probably another topic all on its own, is native versus hybrid. We get a lot of questions on, hey, we want to do hybrid. I want to go hybrid apps. Tell me why that's sometimes a mistake, or what your viewpoint is on it.
I had a bad joke.
Long pause.
Yeah, I'll keep it to myself. But you know, native versus hybrid is a healthy discussion. Generally speaking, if it's for one device platform, go native. Sometimes it may seem like double work. However, the long term support.
Just for a little context, when you say hybrid, what is hybrid to you?
Well, I haven't got to hybrid yet. I was just on native. but if you if you're supporting multiple platforms, so if I had to support, let's say iOS devices like for corporate users and Android devices for in store back of the house for a rugged use case, then hybrid could be an option. Typically, for hybrid applications, you write in one language. It could be Dart, JavaScript, C Sharp, but it will give you two platform outputs. So you can get an Android and iOS. Sometimes you can get an Android, iOS, desktop, and web version of the application if you're doing something like Flutter nowadays. But you know, my rule of thumb is if it's just for one platform, the best, less headaches you can have is to go native. You truly have to go hybrid, start with web hybrid. Web is probably the only hybrid, you know, I would put my money on this book, although there's some great tools. But if you really, really need to go hybrid, there are a lot of great hybrid platforms out there. I know I mentioned Flutter. You know, Xamarin's another one. If you have a big, you know, dev team that's used to C Sharp or it's really ingrained with Microsoft, we've done that before for, you know, big clients at scale. So it works. But you know, it's not worth the technical debt that you would create. It's not worth the extra effort if it's not on two platforms or not on multiple platforms.
All right. So don't write hybrid if you don't have to.
Right.
If you do, look at web first.
Exactly.
All right. So let me do a quick recap. So the seven mistakes we see people make, number one, migrating one for one, like really take advantage of the opportunity. Number two was over-engineering. So building for things you don't need to build for. So scanners, sleds, all these like problems you've had historically, take a step back and see.
Make sure there are still problems.
Make sure. Number three, frameworks. So whether it's SquareUp, whether it's stuff coming out of Google, use it, look for the reputable ones.
Yep.
Number four, invest in user experience. So spend the time on the front end of a project, looking at your processes. Can you optimize them? Can you create value from them? Five was the middleware. So get rid of your 2001 SOAP services and replace it with JSON or a newer standard. Number six was invest in your network. So think about your connectivity, the value and power you have on the mobile devices. And number seven was don't use hybrid unless you definitely have to. Go native unless you need a hybrid. So thanks for covering these with me today. Like I said, we have a lot of topics we could have talked through, and these were the seven that we see the most often that companies get burned, and it's really expensive to fix these after the fact. So, you know, if you're looking at these, you know, think through them, you know, like Richard said, there's points in time where it makes sense to do certain things. There's always the trade-offs and balances, but, appreciate you talking through this with me today. And then for future episodes, if anybody has any other questions or topics, send them to us. And if we pick your topic for a podcast, we'll actually send you some free Blue-Fledged swag. So
there you go.
Appreciate you guys being with us today, and have a good one.
Thank you for listening to the Enterprise Mobility Roundup podcast. If you enjoyed the discussion, please take a few moments to rate us. If you would like to listen to future episodes, please subscribe. To learn more about mobility topics or submit any questions, visit us at bluefletch.com.